So you recently made some comments on the state of Aboriginal education in Canada as being discriminatory. Could you tell us more about that and the Martin Aboriginal Education Initiative?
Well, if you take a look at the state of education as it applies to Aboriginal Canadians, it's pretty clear that our universities and our colleges have played tremendous catch-up in terms of accessibility, in terms of programs. I think that the difference between today and a decade ago or a generation ago is the difference between night and day. Unfortunately, the same thing has not occurred in terms of early learning, in terms of primary schools, or in terms of secondary schools on or off reserve. And that is the area where the Martin Aboriginal Education Initiative is focusing. We have business programs for grades 11 and 12 in high schools right across the country, and they're expanding substantially. We have a model literacy program in two reserve schools, which we're working on. It's a five-year program to basically demonstrate that we can do a lot better if the proper government funding was there. We have a mentorship program with the banks and with accountants, and we have set up a website, a Promising Practices website, which is set up so that teachers, primarily in remote schools, can get access to the newest practices. And where these programs are now expanding literally and substantially. But the basic problem, and the reason that I said that the government's approach, the federal government's approach to education is discriminatory, is the absolutely unacceptable underfunding by anywhere from 20% to 40% that is provided, for instance, First Nation schools on reserve, which is within federal government jurisdiction, as compared to the provincial schools, which are, of course, off reserve, where the funding is substantially higher. And the fact is that if you take a look at that, let's take it in Attawapiskat, which is now so much in the headlines. I mean, to build a school, to have a school for a decade on a dump, a toxic dump, and to refuse to deal with it, you know, one of the last things we did as a government said there's going to be a new school come in. And we were right to do that. The new minister under the Conservative government said there would be a new school, and then the most recent minister has said, you know, that there'll not be such a school. And now, only in the last couple of weeks, because of public attention, has he said that they're going to take a look at this school. This is wrong.
I was in Attawapiskat a couple of years ago, and it has astounded me how the current Minister of Indian Affairs has said that, oh, I don't know about Attawapiskat. I have never been told about Attawapiskat. And Charlie Angus has been talking about this for over 2 years. And I've seen the school. I've seen the mold under the school. I actually crawled under there. The Kelowna Accord, had it been implemented, would it have helped Aboriginal poverty and education in this country?
Well, first of all, let me just pick up on your comment about how the current minister has said that he didn't know about it. It's just, that boggles the mind. The fact is, the entire Department of Indian and Northern Affairs knows about Attawapiskat. And those public servants who were there in my time are there today. And that they didn't brief the minister on it is just not believable. You know, Minister of Defense, you know, not knowing that there was a war going on in Afghanistan. I don't know. I cannot believe that a minister would not have known that. If he didn't, I don't know where he has been. Now, as far as the Kelowna Accord, it would have made a huge difference. Kelowna, first of all, was built on really two principles. One is that, you know, 200 years of telling the nation's first peoples what to do hasn't worked, and it's quite understandable. And so what Kelowna was the federal government, for the first time, meeting with the provinces and territories around a table with the Aboriginal leadership and saying to the Aboriginal leadership, you tell us what the problems are, you tell us how you see the solutions, and we will work with you in partnership as equals to find those solutions. And that is the only way in which we're going to deal with this. For, you know, this is the problem with third-party management, for the federal government to simply step in and say, well, you're out, we're in, and we're telling you what to do, that won't work. It never has worked. So Kelowna, it's the Kelowna approach was a radically different way of approaching it, and in my opinion, the only way of working at it. The second thing, of course, is the issues. We recognize, housing, clean water, good governance, education, healthcare, all of these have got to be worked with holistically. All of it is part of a whole. And you're not going to, we didn't say we were going to turn it around overnight. What we felt we needed was a 10-year program, the first $5 billion to go in the first 5 years, and then new monies to go after that, and working hand in hand. And if the answer to your question is, we have lost 6 years because the Conservatives walked away from Kelowna. That is a tragedy. And would all of the problems have been solved? No. But we would have been an awful lot closer to their solution if Kelowna had not been reneged on.
Is there a possibility of reviving Kelowna?
Oh, I very much hope so. I believe, as I said to you, that the Kelowna approach is the only approach. That is to say that look to work as equals across the table, no longer trying to impose Ottawa's will on the First Peoples on the one hand, and the second, having the provinces and territories at the table because they want to be there, they want to be part of the solution. I don't believe there is a solution outside of the Kelowna approach. And I don't know why, the current government wouldn't want to take Kelowna and say, look, we can build on this. This is a framework. That's what we said it was. We signed the transformative agreement with the province of British Columbia, and you see how much further British Columbia is right now. But the intention was, within the immediate months, to sign similar agreements with every province and with the Aboriginal leadership in each of those provinces. And that's what has to be done.
Do you think the government is taking these problems seriously now that the situation at Attawapiskat has blown out into the national consciousness? Because that's what I think it's really needed to happen, was Attawapiskat needed to become a Walkerton. It needed to become like that, exposed. And the government is now really falling back on itself. Do you think this is going to be the push that that people need to just like get them to start paying attention to First Nations?
Well, I would very much hope so, and I think that your analogy to Walkerton is a good one. I think the answer is we're going to find out when the government comes down with its budget. If in the budget the government says we're going to do what Kelowna did, we are going to eliminate the discriminatory funding in terms of education, we're going to eliminate the discriminatory funding in terms of welfare and in terms of health care, and we are going to lay out in conjunction with the First Nations on reserve and with all Aboriginals off reserve a legitimate plan for housing, for clean water. And by the way, in doing the housing, and there was a very interesting article in the Globe and Mail, that we're going to do it in building the kinds of housings that are applicable and reflect the cultural backgrounds and the needs of Aboriginal Canadians, then I think that there is a real chance. But if, in fact, all we hear are fine words now dealing with the issue in one community, Attawapiskat, ignoring the others, and if the money isn't provided in the budget, then I think that there is going to have to be very strong positions taken by all Canadians, not just Aboriginal Canadians, to say to the government, hey, this isn't a one-off. This is really the most important social problem we as a country face.
There is a proposed $19 billion for this omnibus crime bill, as well as $28 billion for the military jets. Do you think the government is actually being fiscally and socially responsible with these big, big purchases?
Just look at the mandatory tougher sentences for young people, which are going to lead, obviously, to the building of all of these jails and all of that misallocation of money. Instead of putting it in education, the fact is that the incarceration rate for Aboriginal Canadians is 8 times greater than it is for non-Aboriginal Canadians. And so this bill is going to weigh very heavily on Aboriginal Canadians, far more than others. Again, that's discrimination. And young people shouldn't be in jail. They should be in school. And if your question is that a proper allocation of money, prisons instead of schools? Absolutely not.
And couple last questions. The First Nations Child and Caring Society recently, just a couple years ago, filed a human rights grievance against the government because of the shortchanging of First Nations children in the foster care system. And now they've been caught following Cindy Blackstock, who's been an ardent supporter of these issues. Do you think the government's going in the wrong direction?
I don't think their direction could be more wrong. Let's just deal with the issues again in reverse order. I mean, the following of Cindy Blackstock, who is an outstanding Canadian and an outstanding exponent for the needs of young children. I mean, to be following her in that way, to regard her as the problem instead of the issues that she's raising as the problem, is just simply beyond the pale. Mm-hmm. Now, similarly, for the federal government to be fighting Cindy Blackstock and fighting her cause in front of the Human Rights Tribunal, for the federal government to say that discrimination in welfare funding as between Aboriginal Canadians and non-Aboriginal Canadians is not a violation of the Charter of Rights is beyond belief. When, what do they think the Charter of Rights is for if it isn't to prevent discrimination? And for the federal government to be taking a stand against the most vulnerable members of our society is morally wrong.
And the fact that there are more children in the child foster care system right now than there were in residential schools, which is actually quite astounding.
Yeah, it really is. It's beyond belief. And, you know, Cindy Blackstock will tell you that, in fact, one of the reasons that these welfare problems continue to reoccur is the fact that all of the preventive funding that should be going into welfare is being denied Aboriginal Canadians. The preventive funding that is given at non-Aboriginal Canadians to lower the welfare costs ultimately is being deprived in terms of Aboriginal Canadians. And again, you've got to ask, why the discrimination? And, you know, when people, I mean, I'm now spending most of my time on issues such as this, but when I go to Africa, where I also spend a fair amount of time, and I talk to the Africans about, you know, the needs for them to deal with the problems of their communities, and, you know, I mean, and every so often somebody will say to me, you know, oh, Mr. Martin, I went to McGill, or I went to the University of Toronto, or I went to school in Canada before I came back to Africa, and I've been on some of your reserves, and you as Canadians cannot lecture to us. Mm-hmm. I got to tell you, it makes you feel pretty small.
No, and understandable. And thank you very much, Mr. Martin. Could you just tell us about your website and how my listeners can follow the work that you're doing?
Yeah, well, we're on the website under the Martin Aboriginal Education Initiative, and you can find it there, and you can also get the Promising Practices website, which is there, and what I'll have to do is get somebody from my office to call and give you the greater detail.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for being on the show.
Look, thank you for having me, and thank you for having the show, by the way.
Thank you very much, sir. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.